Welcome to Ujiria, broadcasting live from Business Radio X Studios. Ujiria is a Greek word meaning health of body and mind in aging individuals. Ujiria Radio is a weekly show celebrating the heroes that contribute to the Ujiria of our elderly and disabled population. Now joining us in the studio are your hosts, Sam Grass and Brad Culp.
Good morning. This is Sam Grass. Today is April 29th, and Brad just joining us, so I will I'll belabor the introduction till he's ready to jump in. So,
I'm ready.
Oh, okay. Well, I like a man
who superstar
like
coming at the last
absolutely,
minute.
Absolutely, man. Just jump in there and take the ball. That's great. Also with us is Kevin Finn, our producer. Good morning, Kevin.
Good morning. Speaking of taking the ball, the Hawks won again last night. That was huge.
How about that?
I tell you, and I hate to say it, but that's something I just don't get very excited about. Professional basketball, I just can't handle it.
Well, and I apparently we're moments away from some kind of announcement for the owner of the Clippers.
Oh, yeah.
Let's don't go there.
You know what just blows me away about that is how can he be so stupid?
It doesn't matter, Brad. There's a bunch of stupid people in the world.
He's older. He's stuck in a different age.
Tell you what bothers me is that because of one or two instances, the whole class of people get labeled, and that's what bothers me. That's, you know, there a multitude of people get thrown under the bus because of the actions or words of one individual. I'm sorry.
If I might add, a lot of these things were recorded because he's forgetful. And one of the questions that I had when I first heard about this is we know as individuals get older, they start to have cognitive decline. Could this be, we're not allowed to diagnose until we evaluate him, but could this be early Alzheimer's? Could it be mild cognitive impairment? Because we also see personality changes as individuals get older.
You need to be on his defense team right now.
No, we're not going there. It's an interesting point.
It is. It's a legitimate
point. That was
point.
Our guest, Dr. Angelo Seminaris. Welcome.
Thank you.
Great segue.
Yeah, it was. And, you know, we kind of wing this, but sometimes we hit upon a gold nugget every now and then. Dr. Seminaris is the medical director of the Atlanta Institute of Medicine and Research. Specifically, he does research in various memory disorder type of areas, one specifically being Alzheimer's and dementia. And that's why he was able to bring his expertise to the table there at the introduction. Good morning. How are you, Doctor?
Good morning. Thank you for having me. Pleasure being here.
We're glad to have you. Why don't you begin by telling our listening audience a little bit of what you did just before we started the broadcast. Just give them a background of yourself.
Okay. I'm a physician. I'm a psychiatrist by training. I'm the medical director and principal investigator at the Atlanta Institute of Medicine and Research, located here in Sandy Springs. We conduct clinical trials working with pharmaceutical companies, biotechs, on occasion working with some universities. We've done some studies with Medical University of South Carolina. We've also done some research with Harvard University. Our specialty is the brain, neuroscience, clinical trials. My training, after some time in the U.S. Army as a combat medic, I got out, used the GI Bill, went to college, biology major out at the University of Colorado in Colorado Springs, after which I attended medical school at the University of Colorado School of Medicine in Denver, Colorado. Initially wanted to be a primary care provider, mm-hmm. had no interest in the brain, neurology, psychiatry. But was just fascinated with some of the questions that we had at the time and no answers. Mm-hmm. We didn't know why people heard voices. We gave them medicines for those voices, but nobody knew how they worked. And as I went through training, I realized this is a field that's wide open. I want to be more than just a clinician. I'd like to do clinical research. So I pursued psychiatry. And after an internal medicine internship at Hershey Medical Center in Chocolate Town, USA, mm-hmm. Went back to Colorado to do residency in psychiatry, took 1 year as an externship to work at the state hospital in Colorado, and then off to the National Institute of Mental Health, focusing on schizophrenia research. And this was really the start for my research career. We focused on schizophrenia from a neuroimmunologic perspective. We were trying to figure out if schizophrenia might be a genetic predisposition along with a viral infection that occurs during one of the trimesters of pregnancy. Mm-hmm. And the other area of research was looking at cognitive disturbance in schizophrenics, either due to schizophrenia or due to the medications that we gave them. I then left the National Institute of Mental Health, took my first job at Bayer Pharmaceuticals in Connecticut, running anxiety, depression research, but also working on Alzheimer's disease for a cholinesterase inhibitor that was in development at the time. After a few years at Bayer, I moved on looking for that career step up, becoming a director of research in psychiatry at Solvay Pharmaceuticals here in Atlanta, Georgia. Mm-hmm. So I moved here in 1996. And by then, I'd spent 5 years sitting behind a desk designing research. And I realized I did not go to medical school to sit behind a desk and go to corporate meetings. So I decided to leave and founded the Atlanta Institute of Medicine and Research with a focus on disorders of the brain and been there ever since.
Explain to our audience what your function is on a day-by-day basis at the Atlanta Institute.
Well, you know, when you work for yourself,
I knew as soon as I said that, I'd open the door.
A little bit of jack of all trades, master of none. But basically, I'm the medical director and principal investigator. My job is I do the diagnostic evaluations for every patient that comes into our clinic, trying to get an idea of what's going on, what symptoms they have, how long they've had these symptoms. If we're doing a depression study, it's important to know, is this person truly experiencing a biological depression and they might be appropriate for a research study, or are they just having stress, what we would technically call an adjustment disorder, which is temporary, it'll go away, but you might be anxious, you might be up and down, you might lose some sleep for a period of time. So somebody that comes to the clinic and said, I'm depressed ever since I lost my job yesterday, that's not depression.
Right.
But if somebody says, I haven't been doing well, no energy, can't concentrate, irritable, not sleeping well, it's been going on for about a year, I was warned, I was put on probation, then I lost my job, then things got worse, I might say your depression caused your job loss and, it'll be difficult for you to find a new job unless we get the symptoms under control.
Okay.
So that's with depression and anxiety. And we also do fibromyalgia, insomnia, Alzheimer's disease, and we're working with these companies and these universities. We're trying to find an answer. We're trying to get a better understanding, testing medications with different mechanisms of action, different chemicals. And if it works, that's great. If it doesn't work, we've answered a key question, and we can go back and say, let's drop this line of thinking. Let's move forward with a new line of thinking. That's part of why I'm here today is, we've got a lot of different ideas about what the cause of Alzheimer's is.
Mm-hmm.
Different companies from small biotechs with, virtual staffing of 3 or 4 people and venture capital funding, all the way up to the large pharmaceutical companies, Pfizer's, Merck's, Novartis. Everybody has a different thought, a different idea, and we're having trouble getting to an answer. And the biggest issue is that we don't have enough volunteers to go into these trials. And looking at the Alzheimer's Association website, they have one paragraph out of the website that pertains to research. And that one paragraph says that, 50,000 people would answer the question in the 100 clinical trials that are out there. We've kind of looked at the number of clinical trials, some studies that are run under government funding, some that are running from pharmaceutical company and biotech funding. If we lump all of these together, we believe that fewer than 100,000 people participating in these clinical trials for Alzheimer's disease would help us to answer many, many questions. And if we find something that works, so much the better. We get that new medication to market much quicker and start getting people on it, and we now have come up with a new gold standard. It may be better than Aricept, Exelon, or Namenda. If we find that it doesn't work, we've also answered a key question, which is, let's give up on this line and move on to something that might be more promising. But we, you know, we're looking at a generation, you know, as Tom Brokaw said, the greatest generation. Mm-hmm. They are not as familiar with medical research as the younger population is, people that are, you know, 50 and under. They go to the physician. That's still the population that believes physicians are gods. And they do exactly what the physician says. And if the physician doesn't recommend a reevaluation, a possible clinical trial, they won't pursue it because it was never mentioned. Right. The family members that are taking care of these individuals with Alzheimer's, they're too stressed. They're trying to lead their lives, work their jobs, trying to figure out how to keep mom or dad safe, keep them from wandering out the door, leaving the burner on, which might cause a house fire. So for them to go out and do the research, it's very difficult. They're trying to find, you know, who's going to take care of them? Who's going to pay for this care? What does this medication cost? When do we hit that Medicare or Medicaid donut that everybody talks about? You know, because these family members aren't old enough to know yet right. how Medicaid, Medicare work. So there's a lot of stress on them. So we, you know, we're trying to get that word out to say, you know, here we are. In the whole United States, we have 5 million individuals that suffer from Alzheimer's. We believe that, you know, by the year was 2015, mm-hmm. that, you know, we're going to have quite a few more, and it's going to cost, you know, right now we're thinking that Alzheimer's costs are, you know, $150 billion to $200 billion. Health and Human Services coverage, Medicare, Medicaid is $11 billion alone. It's a lot of taxpayer money. We have a pending tsunami coming for all of us. I mean, here we are, except for our producer, who's just a young little whippersnapper there.
Yeah, but he's the one that's going to be paying the footing the bill, so he better be interested in this.
And we won't know that he is.
That's right.
So if we say that fewer than 100,000 people would help us to answer the question, and we've got 5 million in the United States,
why
can we not find volunteers? Why are people not interested? We, you know, my personal thoughts, when Michael J. Fox came down and was revealed that he had Parkinson's disease, everybody liked Michael J. Fox. They liked the movies that he made. They mm-hmm. liked him as an actor, as a person. And now with his foundation, donations come in. He then funds research. You know, he's gotten back into acting. We see the abnormal movements of Parkinson's disease on television. And it's right there in your face. And you can say, you know, I'm aware of it. The doctor mentioned that somebody in the family's got Parkinson's. Why don't we get them into a research study? And we're making some remarkable breakthroughs in the treatment of Parkinson's disease. But Seth Rogen, his mother-in-law, he went before Congress to testify. I think he said that he started and there were just a handful of senators sitting there. And by the time he was finished, there were only two.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he talked about his mother-in-law and his charity, Hilarity for Charity, which is to raise money for Alzheimer's. But we don't really see him as a spokesperson. He presented a personal story. But when Ronald Reagan came down with Alzheimer's, the first thing that they did was to kind of hide him away because Alzheimer's is an embarrassing thing. You know, the changes in the personality, you know, the irritability, maybe some outbursts, you know, the sundowning that occurs. It's just better to put them away. Don't let the cameras go there. Nancy Reagan, in an interview, said that it was the most debilitating thing that she'd ever seen in her entire yeah. life. But since the population doesn't get to see it, most people that I've talked to, they think that Alzheimer's is just forgetfulness. They don't realize it's the sixth leading cause of death right. in the United States, and it's higher than breast cancer and prostate cancer combined.
Mm-hmm.
It's just grandma's getting old or grandpa's getting old. They don't realize that the computer is slowly shutting down, which then shuts down vital organ systems, and you know, the memory loss leads to the behavioral changes, which leads to the medical complications, at some point nursing home and hospice, and then death. And we have no answers, but we need to get somewhere. We need to figure out what medicines work, which ones don't, what is the true mechanism, so that we can then start advising younger people. If we find out that there's a nutritional component, Maybe we eat too much sugar in our diet. Maybe we don't exercise enough. Maybe some people with a genetic predisposition should avoid certain things in their life, in their career. A lot of questions, a lot of hypotheses, not enough volunteers.
What's giving you hope right now?
What's giving me hope right now is that small companies, a lot of these universities that were doing research in the laboratory had a finding that the universities really over the last 20 years, they've gotten into filing a patent on these findings and then getting, you know, investors to create a company. Then they take their compound out of the university into this company. They hire the right people to understand what the FDA regulations are on development, and they actually start doing testing. Yeah. Unlike, you know, years ago when I was working in the pharmaceutical company, everybody was looking at cholinesterase inhibitors, every major pharmaceutical company. So it was like the days of Prozac, Paxil, Zoloft, Celexa, Luvox. They're all SSRIs, one mechanism of action. Different chemicals from different chemical companies, but only one mechanism of action. Well, today, it's very different. If we look at it 20 years later, we are looking at so many different mechanisms of action. I think the more research that's being done in the laboratory, the more that they're learning. And as they learn, they roll out new possible mechanisms of action. And with that, once you understand the mechanism of action of a disease, your hypothesis, you then start working on development of a drug to see in rats, animal models, to see if it reverses or stops the progression of disease. And if it does, then these companies look for additional funding and then roll it out for clinical testing. So what gives me hope as somebody, you know, it's in middle age here, is that we're not just looking at one mechanism of action. We're looking at, 20 to 30 across many, many different companies.
So as you said, there's a number of avenues that can be explored. Let's take a step back, though, and go back to what you defined as a problem. It's the lack of participants in these clinical studies in order to determine the effectiveness or lack thereof of this treatment. What are you or what are people like you looking for when they're looking when they need a participant in that study? Define it if you can.
Well, the most difficult part is where are these people? And so, as a clinic and as a participant in a national or international study, we share information with other clinics across the country. And, some will go to health fairs. Some will go to caregiver support groups. Some do some advertising. Some will contact physicians' offices and just say, look, if you have anybody that you think might be appropriate, would you refer them for a free evaluation? That's the item. We talk about the costs of healthcare with the patients with Alzheimer's or dementia. But participating in a clinical trial, the Food and Drug Administration tells us that we can't use the word free. And that comes from an ethical basis, which is, well, it takes some of their time. So if it's taking up their time, then it's not free. And if they have to travel to the clinic, then that's not free either. So we can use the words at no cost. So at no cost, they get a diagnostic evaluation. They get a brain scan. They get physicals. They get blood work done, hematology, chemistry, urinalysis. We evaluate to make sure that there is no other medical reason for why they're experiencing this memory loss, this dementia. And if everything else is clear, they qualify for the study. And within that study, everything that occurs in that study is at no cost. Right. The medicine that they're taking is, no cost, free. If they were already taking a medicine for their Alzheimer's, that medicine continues to be provided, because studying Alzheimer's is very similar to studying medicines in seizures. In seizures, it would be considered unethical to take a person with seizures off their medicine to run them through a double-blind placebo-controlled trial. So what happens is they go into the study and all of them stay on their medicine, but half get a second medicine added, the test medicine, and the other half get the placebo or the sugar pill added. And if the group taking the two does better than the group taking only one medicine, then the FDA says, well, safe and effective. And the same thing with Alzheimer's.
Is there a if someone is diagnosed with Alzheimer's or dementia, whatever it may be, is there a point in time where the severity of the disorder would disqualify them for being in a study?
Yes. 20 years ago, when we were running these Alzheimer's studies, we were looking for those individuals that were moderate to severe. And over those 20 years, we've learned that the damage is done. The more severe the disease, the damage seems to be permanent. So now we're looking more at mild to moderate, and we're looking to see, can we arrest the problem before it gets to that point where it becomes so debilitating that they need to be admitted to some type of an inpatient or a caregiving facility.
Yeah. So what you're saying there is, I'm sorry, Brad, I didn't mean to cut you off. What you're saying is that right now you want to stop the progression of the disease rather than to cure.
That's
right?
Correct.
Okay.
That's correct.
All right.
So what's the downside for the participants?
The downside? Well, there is the downside that it doesn't work. And so we haven't really gained anything. And it becomes a major downer for the patient, their family, if they say, well, I participated in this study and nothing happened. But again, if they're on their medicine, nothing has gotten worse. Downside could also be that you find something that does work and it's not available and the study comes to an end. And we've seen that happen in other clinical trials. We've had patients where they wait 2 years. They'll participate in a study. They're like, this is the best I've ever done. It's the best medicine I've ever taken. I know it was placebo versus drug, but doctor, I swear I must have been on the real stuff. And they'll call periodically and say, is it out yet? Is it out yet? Is it out yet? Mm-hmm. Can I write to my senator? Can I write to the FDA? And if it does get approved, you know, we have a policy of calling all these patients and say, hey, it's available. Come into the clinic. We can get you started. We can give you guidance, give your doctor guidance to get you started and maintained. Some of the Alzheimer's studies are short. They might be 12 weeks long. Others that we've seen are 3 years long, where, you know, there's the initial phase, but then they're looking at how do you do a year later, 2 years later, 3 years later. And because it is such a slow progressing illness, really the FDA many years ago said that if they could follow these patients over 10 years, they would do it. But they knew that no pharmaceutical company could afford to ever run a study that long.
Right.
But the reality is they're getting treatment. They're getting treatment free of charge. And they certainly aren't going to get worse than they would if they just maintained their current regimen. So really the only downside is, at the end of the day, maybe a disappointment or a loss of hope.
Yes. I mean, they might have side effects, but if we, you know, talk to family members, they'll just say, with these cholinesterase inhibitors, they just can't tolerate the massive diarrhea and GI upset that their loved one experiences. And, one woman that I was just talking to just 2 weeks ago said that she was trying to get her sister to understand the stress that she had in her life taking care of their mother.
Right.
And so her sister flew in from San Francisco, stayed at the house, and just said, oh my goodness, I didn't realize mother was in such bad shape. And one of the things she noticed that her mother was walking and basically having a bowel movement that hit the floor. And she didn't understand and said, we need to put a diaper on her. And she said, well, she had one and she had sores. And those sores can get infected and that infection can actually worsen the dementia. So she said, I actually took the diapers off, I do skin care, and I've decided it's easier for me to clean up mom and then go back and clean up the floor. Thankfully, we have a tile floor, so it's simple. And her sister was just aghast, and she said, within several days, realized I haven't helped you as much as I should have. Yeah. Well, when she told me the story, I just said, well, which one is she on? Is she on Aricept or is she on Exelon? And she said, oh, she's on Aricept. Said, well, that's the major side effect of these cholinesterase inhibitors. But we have to put up with the downside of a side effect to try and get the benefit of slowing down the progression, because that's the best we can do, slow down the progression of the disease. We'd like to stop the progression. We'd like to reverse the progression. But
slowing it down is the first step.
That's what we've done so far. Now that's our gold standard. What we need to do now is find something better.
Yeah.
What research is being done in terms of identifying risk factors or, you know, people that are likely to get Alzheimer's later on, and you know, how does that play into this picture?
Yeah, is there a predisposition to this that you know?
There is. In fact, the only predisposition that we know now is a genetic predisposition, and there are those that have familial onset Alzheimer's disease, which is an early Alzheimer's, typically 40s and 50s, but even as young as 30s, and that's genetic. Down syndrome, trisomy 21, these are individuals, you know, we understood in earlier years, mental retardation. These are individuals that start to have early onset dementia, and it's tied to a genetic disease.
Down syndrome, then, to put it in my terms, is maybe related somehow to Alzheimer's dementia, is what you're saying?
No, it's not related to Alzheimer's. It's just that these individuals at an earlier age start to experience dementia. And so we're trying to understand, Down syndrome is a genetic disease. They're getting this dementia.
Yeah.
We have this familial onset. So the future of healthcare is personalized medicine. And personalized medicine is not just having a diagnostic evaluation by a clinician, but to collect some DNA and do some genetic testing, look for a marker, and that marker will tell us what medicine will work, what medicine will not work, what side effects you might get, which medicine would cause a side effect. Mm-hmm. So someday you'd go to the doctor, have an interview. They'd collect some DNA, whether it's a cotton swab in your mouth, and send it to the lab. And as technology advances, they'll have these machines in the office. And coming up on the computer will be the results. And the doctor will say, I think it was Alzheimer's. The genetic testing confirms that it's Alzheimer's. And the genetic testing tells us we should use drug A, B or C. B or C might cause side effects, but drug A would work and without side effects, and that's personalized medicine.
Wow. What percentage of Alzheimer's cases today do we think come from the family genetics?
It's a smaller percentage, and again, we're still learning. The Europeans, especially the Scandinavians, have these large databases. Because with socialized medicine, everybody's got to participate. And so they're looking at a mutation in one of the proteins in the brain. And, you know, the study was done following service members from the military from enlistment up to, I believe, 40 years after. And they found a finding. So it's higher in Scandinavian males, but in just kind of the general U.S. population, it might be 1 in 10,000. So for us, it's very low. But in Scandinavia, where they're all Scandinavians, other than the immigrant population there, the incidence would be higher. So that's important for them to know. We're a much more heterogeneous country here. You know, the U.S. and Canada, because we have immigrants from all over the world, very different from what you might see in Asia, Europe, the Middle East, Africa.
And so by and large, the vast majority of cases, we don't know why they've contracted the disease.
Right. But if you have a parent that has Alzheimer's, then it would be good for you to monitor, try and get into evaluation as quickly as possible if you're starting to worry. You know, forgetting where you put your keys, I mean, that's just forgetfulness. But, you know, where you start to have word-finding difficulties, you put something somewhere and you have no idea why you put it there. Again, in much more severe cases of dementia, the examples are putting the iron in the freezer. Somebody recently was making a frozen pizza, and when they pulled it out of the oven, there were the reading glasses on the rack. Luckily, they let it cool off, and they hadn't melted. They were wondering, you know, how that's never happened before. So we thought, well, if it's not a regular occurrence, then maybe they were reading the directions on the box, took their glasses off to take the pizza out, put it in, and then just pushed it in. But if they start doing repeat offenses like this, then you might say it's time to get in for an evaluation.
Let's go back to, again, to the very beginning, because I think that's the essence of why you're here. I don't even know if this is appropriate. How many research trials do you have going on now? Well, let's go back. How many new volunteers would you like to see walk through your door today? That's a better question.
Well, as many as can call.
Okay.
It's important. We have to... the analogy is fishing with a fishing net as opposed to fishing with a hook.
Mm-hmm.
Fishing with a fishing net, you can reevaluate. If somebody's got unstable medical conditions, you might say, let's get that medical condition under control first. If they have a urinary tract infection, because again, we know that in older people, a urinary tract infection can lead to mental status changes. We wouldn't want to tell that person they have Alzheimer's. Right. We would want to give them an antibiotic. So getting a larger group to come in the door, get that free evaluation that's offered, and then pick the ones that would be most appropriate for the right trial. Those that have something else going on, let's give them copies of their labs. Let's give them copies of their brain scan. Let's send them off to their doctor with suggestions, instructions that they might need to see a specialist or they might need some additional testing for some other medical condition.
Yeah, and I need to add, and we've talked about this numerous times, and the downside to this is, yes, they're going to be in a clinical trial and it's not going to help. But even in that, as you might define a failure, there is a positive because you now know which avenue not to travel.
Right. So we call that a societal benefit.
Mm-hmm.
Individuals participate in trials because they're looking for their personal benefit.
Right.
But any piece of information that they help us to collect goes into a larger database where it doesn't just help a company. It helps university researchers in the United States, in Canada, in Europe, in Asia. And somewhere in there, that information will kick out the next step in development and understanding of the cause of the disease, the best approach to treat this disease, and maybe someday a way to actually prevent Alzheimer's from even starting.
That's great. Dr. Sam Benares, it's been great. You've done a fabulous job, and we are out of time, and I hate to cut you off, but I will invite you back, please, if we can do this again and maybe hone in on specific issues. That would be great.
Well, it's been a pleasure. Thank you very much.
I really appreciate it. Before we go, let me ask you this question. If we have a listener out there that has heard this and something's gone off or some the switch has been thrown in their mind, what piece of advice might you give them? What can they do to take a positive step?
I've forever, even as far back as a medical student, I've said never accept the status quo.
Yeah.
Always be proactive and always look for more. Get as much as you can to help yourself or a loved one.
That's great. That's great advice. Thank you for being our guest. Good information. Good show.
Yeah. Well, thank you.
I appreciate it. We want to, I'm sorry. Once again, Dr. Sam Benares, tell us how the listening audience can reach you.
Okay. I'm at the Atlanta Institute of Medicine and Research, and our telephone number is 770-817-9200.
And is there a website?
It's www.researchmeds.com.
Okay. All right. Well, we appreciate it again. Thanks for being our guest once again.
Well, thank you for having me.
We want to remind our listening audience that they can always listen to a rebroadcast of today's show at eugeriaradio.com. And as we always, we want to close and say that if the youth of this nation is its greatest natural resource, it goes without saying that the seniors of this nation is its greatest national treasure. Thank you, and God bless.
Eugeria Radio is sponsored by Griswold Special Care and broadcast live from the Business Radio X studios.